Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, one and all, to another edition of the official Redbird Rants podcast. I am your host, Tito Rivera, and I am joined tonight by one of our contributors, Christian May Suzuki. He's coming back from a small absence. So, Christian, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Tito. Despite the Cardinal loss, but it's great to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you back, and we are definitely excited here because it is opening day. Now it's, I guess, transitioned into opening night. But either way, it's the first day for baseball, and we are super excited about that. Unfortunately, the Cardinals did not come away with a win today, but we'll get into that here in a little bit. But first, we're going to go ahead and get started with some scores around the league so that you guys can get caught up. And we'll start with the Minnesota Twins and Baltimore. Baltimore ended up winning 3-2 and 11. Houston beat Texas 4-1. The Yankees went on to win 6-1. Giancarlo Stanton, of course, we know him, hit two home runs today, and they were no doubters. Tampa Bay came back and beat Boston 6-4. Chicago ended up beating Miami 8-4. And looks like San Francisco is now leading 1-0, or has been leading 1-0, and they're in the bottom of the ninth against the Dodgers, and Clayton Kershaw is supposed to take that loss if they can hold that lead, so we'll see how that one turns out. And other scores wrapping up are Oakland over Angels 6-5, Milwaukee over San Diego 2-1, Atlanta over Philadelphia 8-5, and the Chicago White Sox putting a pounding on Kansas City 14-7. Christian, does anything stand out to you with those scores?
Well, one thing that wasn't mentioned particularly with the scores, but a game by an individual player today, his name is Matt Davidson, the DH for the Chicago White Sox. He went 3-4 today with three homers and one walk. So, I mean, that's definitely it. I mean, just because Giancarlo Stanton is the big name doesn't mean he should overshadow the day. I mean, clearly from a number standpoint. From a number standpoint, I think that this man had the best day today, so I got to give a quick shout-out to him.
Absolutely, and if you guys are into fantasy baseball, you might want to watch out for Matt Davidson here in the next couple of days, because if he rides this hot streak, there's no telling what they could do. And props to the Chicago White Sox. They ended up hitting six home runs on the day, so that's very significant. But let's go ahead and get into some of the news today. And boy, what an opening day it was to begin the day for the St. Louis Cardinals. And we're going to go ahead and jump right into the news that the Cardinals and pitcher Greg Holland have come to an agreement for a one-year $14 million deal. I know the physical was pending, and that's being done tonight, but I don't expect any hiccups. Christian, the unexpectedness of this signing blows my mind. I'm not sure what to make of it, and I've been thinking about it all night. What's your reaction to this signing at this moment, or this late in the game?
You know, it's actually kind of funny because I was having a discussion with my dad, who's also a big Cardinal fan, last night, and I was sort of updating him about the whole Jordan Hicks thing. And I was saying something like, man, I can't believe Greg Holland is not going to be signed when the MLB season starts. And he's like, yeah. And my dad's like, yeah, it's looking like it. And yet here we are. And suddenly Greg Holland is the closer for the Cardinals. I'm actually quite happy about it. I know me and fellow contributor Larry have been on the Greg Holland bandwagon for quite some time. I wrote an article a while back about Greg Holland being the closer we need, probably towards the beginning of free agency. So, I mean, it definitely makes sense with the way everything played out. The fact that he rejected a very large contract offer. I believe it was 3 years, $58 million toward the beginning of free agency, and then no one chirped from you never heard a chirp from him again, because I think teams were just scared off by paying a 31-year-old closer that kind of money at that kind of age. But getting him at 1 year, I mean, that is the best thing the Cardinals could have asked for. I mean, the only thing that was really holding them back from signing Holland was the age factor and the risk factor that comes along with a closer. And, I mean, just with a one-year deal, that's essentially canceled out. So, I mean, I'm really, really happy with Holland, because he really, I think, is not only a great pitcher, but he can also be a veteran leader. And we haven't had a combination like that in the bullpen for a decent amount of time.
Right, and I think one thing to definitely take note of is the fact that Holland turned down the qualifying offer of $17.1 million from the Rockies. He also turned down a $15 million option with the Rockies and signs for just a meager $1 million less with the Cardinals. And I think the biggest obvious takeaway here is that the Cardinals' bullpen becomes that much stronger. I mean, when you can fire out Dominic Leone, Luke Gregerson, Jordan Hicks, and Greg Holland, that's pretty dangerous. There's not a lot of room for error, as we saw today, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But having that presence in Greg Holland, I think, really puts the Cardinals in the driver's seat of bullpens in the National League Central. And sure, yeah, they lost a draft pick, and I think I read somewhere it would be the 43rd pick in the draft. Okay, that's fine. That's not that big of a deal to me. But this move shows that the Cardinals are in a win-now mode, slightly, I guess I should say. Maybe a year is not a big telltale sign of winning now, but it's a step in the right direction. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that unquestionably this is a move to shore up a sort of a team right now. I think the Cardinals are they are definitely trying to win now, but I think obviously with the general passivity throughout the offseason, with the young talent, I think that they want to win now, but they also understand that there's no need to Brett Cecil us again and bog us down with these long-term veteran contracts, because if they don't work out, we have these up-and-coming guys who could try next year and then the year after that. And any one of those years, those guys could suddenly – something could click and they could figure it out, and suddenly they're the guy. And I think the Cardinals understand that. But at the same time, they're unquestionably trying to win now. I mean, they're not a team that's ever been a hard rebuilding team. There's never been a team that's been a tanking team. It's always been sort of an attempt. There's never that mentality. It's a sort of a – not a rebuild, but a retool. And I think that they're just continuing to exhibit that with this move.
Exactly. And so for, you know, Cardinal fans listening around now or later on in the show, you know, Greg Holland is, again, pending physical, more than likely is going to pass that physical. How they are going to transition his arm into the bullpen in the next coming days, that's still to be determined. But you would have to guess that he'll get some action here within the next 2 weeks. It just depends on where his arm is. And that's something to keep an eye on. You don't just want to rush him out there just because it's Greg Holland. You got to see whatever he has and what kind of velocity he has at this point. My hopes is that he's kept his arm strength up, and I'm pretty sure that's what I've read from Derek Gould. So, you know, time will tell with him, but I think this is the right move. It helps a guy like Jordan Hicks in particular to be around somebody like Greg Holland if, in fact, the Cardinals are grooming Hicks to be the closer of the future. And that's something that cannot be, you know, understated. Sure, Luke Gregerson probably could have done that, but he's hurt. So he's not even around right now. And one thing, speaking of that, they still have to make room for Greg Holland on the roster. I have not seen any news regarding that move. Have you, Christian?
No, I have not actually seen anything like that either. They haven't really announced anything.
And I'm assuming it, when they announce, you know, the official signing of Greg Holland, and once he passes his physical, we'll know. But you would have to guess somebody is going off the, you know, the 25-man roster here soon. And my guess, and I think everybody's guess, is probably Bud Norris. Do you think that's a fair assumption, Christian?
I mean, he's kind of the sore thumb and all, and not just the pitching staff, but the entire lineup. I mean, there's no reason to not think that he's the one that's going to go.
Right. I just don't see him staying on this team, and I'll say it for some of us. I was a big advocate of not signing him in the first place, and when he was signed, I just was completely dumbfounded by it, and I didn't understand it at all. But now that I think about it, do you think there was a little buyer's remorse when it comes to Bud Norris, considering what they were able to land Greg Holland for?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that. I think that Norris was also sort of a – oh my God, we have to do something, so let's just throw our money out at somebody that might be decent. And because I'm obviously, until just recently, they weren't sure that they were able to get Greg Holland. And they obviously have professed, just as Cardinal fans have professed throughout all last season, that the bullpen was an issue and that the bullpen needed to be improved. And I mean, that's what they attempted to do, even in the most minimalist sense, like they would with the Cecil deal. Obviously, it wasn't as painful because, I mean, we're going to be able to dump it off too. If he does miraculously make it through, I definitely don't see him getting past, say, Alex Reyes coming up in, I would hope, in the next couple of months or something like that. So, I mean, even if he miraculously passes through this, there's no way he's going to be on the roster halfway through the season.
Right. And it's just, again, a matter of time with Alex Reyes. And this does present an intriguing thing about Alex Reyes, though. Most of what we were told or what we were led to believe suggests that Alex Reyes was to come out of the bullpen because the front office wants to limit his innings. They don't want to push him too fast. And then by next season, he's going to be a starter. With the signing of Greg Holland, though, that starts to kind of send some mixed signals about what Alex Reyes' role actually will be with the team, in my opinion. Do you get the sense that Alex Reyes' role will change with the Greg Holland signing?
Honestly, from what I've read, from what I've seen, they have been thinking about Alex Reyes as a future starter, a future long-time starter.
Right.
I personally, with 100-mile-an-hour fastball power curve, I mean, I would have personally put him as – I mean, he could easily have been a closer prospect, and he would be a great eighth-inning guy himself. But with Greg Holland added into the mix, I mean, it essentially confirms that Reyes, they're looking at Reyes as a starter, and that's what he will be. Because at this point, there's just no more room for him in the bullpen without someone else having to take a back seat.
Right, and I completely agree with you. So, again, this is going to be an interesting time for Alex Reyes and the St. Louis Cardinals as they move forward with Greg Holland. But you can pencil down for Greg Holland ending ninth inning for most of your games at this point. You know, at one point we thought it was going to be Dominic Leon. You know, I'm sure earlier in the offseason we thought it was just going to be Luke Gregerson. But I would imagine so that the pecking order for when it comes to games is going to be Hicks in the seventh, Leon in the eighth, or those two flip-flops, and then Greg Holland in the ninth. Which isn't a bad thing because, you know, obviously Leon and Hicks have shown that they can handle the pressure And especially today with the way Hicks looked, you can't go wrong with either of them in the seventh or eighth inning. But the veteran Holland will take the ninth inning, in my opinion. And that's just pure out of closer experience. But again, he's going to serve as a mentor to Hicks, whether most of us like it or not, or whether most of us saw Hicks as a starter or want him to be a starter. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get into a recap of the St. Louis Cardinals game versus the Mets. This was game one of 162. And of course, we all know at this point that the Cardinals ended up losing 9-4. Noah Syndergaard gets the win and Carlos Martinez gets the loss. I think, Christian, the big story of today is one, Carlos Martinez's walks, and really the pitching surrendering so many walks, and the Cardinals striking out so many times. What did you take away from today's game?
Well, in terms of the striking out thing, I think from really from the moment the game started, I think the team was like almost overly aggressive at the plate. They were swinging away. And I mean, as we see on the box score, I mean, it leads to 15 strikeouts. And there was a comment in the Redbird Ranch chat that we had that was something like, oh, our only chance is to try and get Syndergaard early. And as that was said, I think it was someone, I think it might have been Fowler, swung on the second or third pitch of the at-bat, and that was it. And it was just, that was kind of the story of the game in my eyes. I mean, obviously it worked out with a couple of people, like, I mean, Jose Martinez, he certainly saw the ball well. He only took 11 pitches. He jumped on what he saw and everything. But it was definitely, I think they needed to sort of sit back a little bit. I mean, obviously if Syndergaard's on, there's nothing you can do. But I think that they sort of needed to relax a little bit, sort of make Syndergaard pitch and, you know, sort of sit back and take it a little bit more, because they were just kind of flailing their bats and it wasn't working.
And yeah, and that might have been the game plan. You know, Syndergaard has obviously a high velocity or high speed fastball, and so that makes it easier to be a free swinging team. Let's talk a little bit about Carlos Martinez's start. Unfortunately, obviously, it did not go the way we wanted it to go, but listen to this stat line. 4.1 innings, 4 hits, 5 runs, 4 earned runs, 6 walks, 5 strikeouts, for an ERA of 8.31. The obvious thing that stands out here is the walks. Last year, his inconsistencies early on in the game cost him to go deep into innings. And we see it here again. Christian, what do you think needs to happen for him to be able to get past this hump?
I mean, it's really hard to say right now, because, I mean, if you really looked at what was going on with that game, I mean, it seemed like something was off mechanically. Didn't seem like it was, like there was any sort of pinpoint thing that you could really point out. It was just, he was just missing sometimes. There would be one pitch, he would throw a beautiful two-seam fastball that would break in toward the off right toward the corner, and then he would miss three more fastballs and walk the guy or something like that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's hard to really say that there's anything that the coaching staff can do at this point. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's really on him, especially as the leader of the rotation. He has got to cut it down. It's got to come from himself. He's really got to look at himself, understand where his position is as a team leader and as a leader of the rotation, and what is expected of him and what is acceptable. And he really needs to cut down whatever it is that's not acceptable, and I'm sure he knows what it is. So it's really time to put up or shut up for him.
And I think most of us agree, and I think a lot of people will say, well, it's just one start. But again, I go back and say, you know, this was a problem last year. You know, he couldn't hardly get to the sixth inning, and when he did, that was it. Because by the time he reached the sixth inning, he was already at 90-something pitches. And it was, again, it was the same kind of thing today. He hit 90 pitches in 4.1 innings. That is a lot for such a short game for him. And, if he is going to be the leader of the staff, as you say, he needs to push past that. And it starts with the walks. That's really what it comes down to. You cannot be walking six guys. You can't be walking guys with two outs and expect to win games. Because I tell you what, I wrote about this in an article recently about the lineup needing to score runs. Last year, the Cardinals scored somewhere right around 4.3 runs. That's really where they're at right now, and that should be good enough to win games because most of the teams in the playoffs last year scored right around 4.7, 4.8. So if the Cardinals are going to be a team like that and score about four runs a game, somewhere close to five, Martinez needs to be able to pitch well enough to be able to get that win. Because look, at the end of the day, he only gave up four earned runs. He just couldn't get past the fifth inning. And then in comes Bowman. Third of an inning pitch, three hits, three runs, three earned, one walk. That's not good enough. Cecil, one hit, he didn't give up a run, but one of the hits he gave up to Jay Bruce, a left-handed batter, that scores a run. Mayers comes in, does his thing. Hicks comes in, does his thing. Then Tui Vilala gives up a run. It just seemed to me that the pitching was not good until the very last three innings of the game. And if that's going to be the case this season, that is not good enough. And perhaps that's why they got Greg Holland, because they want to shorten the game for their pitchers. But for a pitcher like Carlos Martinez to only go 4.1 innings in the first start, not good enough in my opinion. And that's where it is with him. He needs to improve. And again, I know you probably think the same thing here along with me, Christian. This is just the first game, but it cannot become a pattern. It cannot become a habit at this point. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, that's definitely – it really needs to – like I said, he has to put up soon because, I mean, at the end of the day, he's not – like a young kid anymore. He is starting to get older. He's starting to get to that point where, like, the age is not an excuse for immaturity. The age is not an excuse for the lack of awareness. I mean, just the fact that six walks is not his career high should really tell you something about
exactly
where he's at. I mean, as a number one starter, like, I think if you think about this, these are two teams that are potential wild card teams. This could potentially be the first wild card game.
Like, correct.
Carlos can't do this. This is where we would end if Carlos did something like this. And he is the number one guy. If he was the number three guy, if he's the number four guy, you know, if he pitched, you know, maybe 9 hour floaty little no break fastballs, then sure, yeah, you can get away with six walks, whatever, once in a while. But you are supposed to be an elite talent who has been groomed to be a number one starter with elite stuff. There is absolutely no excuse to be missing, to be dodging the zone or anything like that. There is no excuse. You should be attacking the zone. You should be getting in there. You should be getting people out with your nasty stuff. There is no excuse. And that's the expectation that he should have for himself, because that's the expectation that all Cardinals fans and that, hell, even Mike Matheny has for him.
Right. And before we take our first break and continue on with this conversation, I just have one more question for you. Our co-contributor Josh, you know, said he was listening to Bernie Miklas and seeing, you know, one of the questions asked to Bernie Miklas this morning was who's the first, you know, Cardinal everybody's going to turn on? And one of the names that was thrown out there was Carlos Martinez. And the topic of overreacting to the first start came up. Christian, what do you say to people that are touting, oh, you're just overreacting to this start. He's going to be fine by the next time.
I mean, I get it, but at the same time, those people have to understand this isn't just one start. This isn't just one time. Like, we have to understand that the fact that he looked like the same pitcher that he did last year, that is something that's telling. Now, obviously, there is a long season, and there is time for him to improve. So to say that the season's over or he should be demoted as the number one or that, like, oh, he's, you know, things like that. Yeah, sure, that's overreacting. But there's definitely no question that people should be upset and people should definitely keep their eyes open. People, there is no question that reacting in a way that's upset and that is doubtful of Martinez's ability is not, like, it doesn't just come from over. There's a reason for it. So I kind of fall in the middle on this one.
Yeah, and I think I would feel the same way. I completely understand why people would say, oh, you're overreacting, it's just one start. But again, it's like you say, has anything changed from last year to this year based off one start? No. He didn't have a good spring, and that's just the reality of today's game. So let's take a quick second to take a break. You're listening to the Official Redbird Rants podcast. This is episode 6. Stick with us. Okay, we're back with the Official Redbird Rants podcast, episode 6. This is Tito. I'm here with Christian May Suzuki. We just got done talking about Carlos Martinez's start and the overall pitching of the St. Louis Cardinals and their loss to the Mets today. Let's go ahead and go into the lineup and how it actually performed. You know, we talked about the numerous amounts of strikeouts. For instance, Dexter Fowler 2, Tommy Pham with a not-so-good day with 3 strikeouts, Marcell Ozuna, 3 strikeouts, De Jong 2, Wong 2, and I'm not going to really count Carlos Martinez. I expect him to strike out most of the time, but Christian, I should say, that's a lot of strikeouts for a lineup, and I think I hang my hat on they're not going to face a Noah Syndergaard every time. But if they're going to strike out 14 times a game, that is not a winning recipe, right?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can do that. And I'd like to make a little note. Someone who didn't strike out at all today and who had a hit and a run scored, Matt Carpenter. I think
Preach.
That you were saying that Martinez was supposedly going to be the first player that Cardinals fans turn on. I definitely think that you could argue that Matt Carpenter might be the first that player people turn on simply because of what he's doing and the role he's been put in. People can argue with me about it all day, but I think that with his hitting ability, if he commits to contact hitting, he commits to watching the ball. He is one of the better contact hitters, one of the better leadoff hitters, one of the better non-power hitters in the majors. I think that positioning him in the one spot would be much better than a guy who's a little more swing happy like Dexter Fowler, who showed it with 2 Ks today. But hey, that's just my, and then another thing is I know that obviously it worked out very well, but I do think that Paul DeJong, you could argue, does deserve to move up a little bit just solely off of the power potential. Obviously Yachty is solid protection for a back hitter like that. But I mean, with the power of DeJong, putting him so low with such little base running potential, I mean, especially with a guy like Yachty in front of him, I mean, if he doesn't hit that sinker, if he doesn't get that home run, it might be tough for him to really do anything. But those are just sort of picking at little things that are more personal opinion. But what do you, I think I saw a tweet that you put out about this being the optimal lineup. So what are your thoughts on that, Vito?
Yeah, so I think at the initially when the opening day lineup was released, I looked at it and I said, wow, now that is a lineup I can get behind, mainly because you have your first four hitters, your top first four hitters, and that's what you want. You've got Fowler, Pham, Carpenter, Ozuna. Great. It really comes down to that middle of the order, pretty much from three on down to seven. And to see Jose Martinez get the start, that was fascinating to me, mainly because we were, you know, Joe Trezza from MLB.com, you know, he said his projected lineup didn't even include Jose Martinez. So to see him in the lineup, that was great because this entire spring he's just been absolutely destroying the baseball. And case in point today against one of the better pitchers, definitely top five in the National League in Noah Syndergaard. And then you see, you know, Molina in the traditional sixth spot, and even though he is more than likely going to hit fifth most of the season, followed by DeJong and then Wong. I have always been an advocate of seeing Paul DeJong, you know, be higher in the order. The only issue I have with that is his K rate, and that he does tend to strike out a lot. You know, he struck out twice today, even though he got a hit. That's great. But he struck out twice, left a guy on base, and so that's a very big issue if you're going to put him anywhere higher up than seven. And do I expect Paul DeJong to hit seven all the time? No. I'm sure he'll get some opportunities to hit four, five, or six, and maybe even three sometimes when Carpenter is not going. But the point in case here is that you need to offer your lineup a chance to be the optimal lineup, and that means protection all around your players, your star players. Carpenter needs Ozuna. Ozuna needs somebody behind him that can protect him. And more than likely, that is going to be Yadier Molina. Look what he did today. He hit another home run. Last year, he had 18 and had 82 RBIs. And if you're telling me that you wouldn't take that out of Molina this year, you're absolutely crazy. Do I think he's going to repeat it? No. But at the same time, I'm willing to bet that Molina still has that potential because he's been there before. And Paul DeJong, again, you know, he's a sophomore at this. And so that high K rate is extremely high. And look who didn't strike out as well as Molina. He didn't have a K today. So I like the lineup. I actually didn't mind how it performed. Again, I said it earlier today, four runs usually is good enough to win you ball game. But you can't win – I mean, again, you can't win games – giving up nine either throughout the entire throughout the entire pitching staff. But let's talk a little bit more about Jose Martinez's day. He's 3-for-4, home run, two runs scored, and two RBIs. That home run he hit was a shot. I mean, it was gone. Like, there was no doubt about it. Does the performance today mean he is a regular in the lineup for you, Christian?
I mean, with the way he sort of trended, with how he performed last year, it's really hard to deny him a spot any longer, especially considering the age and the potential ceiling. The only issue is simply just the positions that he plays. There's just a lot of people there that the Cardinals don't particularly want to have on the bench regularly. Obviously, Yorko was subbed out for Martinez this time, and Carpenter moved to third base, where, as I've heard from many in the Redbird Rants writer chat, he is not a very great defensive third baseman by any sense of the imagination. I think that it's just a matter of either finding that trade. It's a matter of someone slumping. It's just sort of finding that excuse to sort of fit him in the lineup. But I mean, as it stands, I personally would like to see him playing over Jorko on a daily basis, But there's obviously that issue of putting Carpenter at third base. With Mike Matheny and his incredible lineup intellect and incredible lineup instability, I just don't see Martinez being a regular yet until someone starts slumping and Matheny just gets tired of that. But until that happens, even though Martinez certainly deserves to be a regular, I don't think I see it happening.
Yeah. It's tough because I think with the way he's hitting, there's no question that you have to keep him in the lineup. And until he cools off, in my opinion. And you have somebody like Jed Jerko that needs at-bats as well. The only option at this point, and this is something that I talked about on the podcast on Tuesday when we were talking with Ben Hockman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, was, you know, will the Cardinals start to move to a platoon at second base and use Jed Jerko at second? Or, you know, to keep him fresh and keep Wong, you know, kind of on his toes? And I think if Jose Martinez is going to be a regular, you know, bat in the lineup, that's the only option they have. Otherwise, it's great to have Jed Jerko off the bench, but that's kind of wasting him at that point because everybody's so high on his bat and, you know, everybody was like, oh, he hit 270-something last year. That's great. But he's not really any better than Wong with the bat besides more power. He's a career 245 hitter, so that's nothing that really says, oh, yeah, I need Jerko in the lineup. Versus Martinez, who's hit pretty much over, you know, 280 with the Cardinals in his limited amount of time here in St. Louis. So, to me, it just makes sense to keep him in the lineup just because he adds that dimension. And to think, if Paul DeJong did not strike out as much, that's exactly where he would be in the lineup, fifth. But you see Jose Martinez, who was another guy that didn't strike out today. He goes 3-for-4, hits a home run, and you have to wonder if Mike Matheny is smart enough to keep him in the lineup. And I think we'll see him there again. So come Saturday, it might be different because, you know, you want to get Jed Jerko a chance to play. You want to put Carpenter in his regular role at first base. I totally get it. When push comes to shove, I do expect Jose Martinez to get a majority of starts at first base now because he continues to hit the ball well. And that's okay with me. And I think it should be okay with everybody else. And that's not to say that Jed Jerko's a bad hitter, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but I'm not as impressed with other people. Are you that impressed with Jed Jerko?
I mean, I think you said it best. As a career, he has not had the greatest, you know, trajectory. Besides last year, he's been a very mediocre hitter. I mean, one could argue that he was in San Diego, and San Diego is like the Cleveland Browns of the NFL, where offensive players come to die. But at the end of the day, he's not even a 260 hitter. And at the end of the day, in this day and age, unless you're hitting like 40 home runs, like Chris Davis I mean, the people like that are expendable in my eyes.
Yeah, and so that's kind of it'll be interesting to see where Mike Matheny goes with this, and I think there should be no worries or panic buttons being pressed if Jed Jerko misses, or not say misses, but doesn't start 3 or 4 games in a row because Jose Martinez and the rest of the lineup are hitting well. But I do expect him to play on Saturday, and I expect Carpenter to move back to first, and we should see Jed Jerko at third. Speaking of Matt Carpenter, I don't think he did too poorly in the third hole today. He ended up hitting a nice double. He went 1-for-4, scored a run. That's what he's there to do. You said it yourself. He needs to return to the average guy that he was in 2013 and what he was in 2015. What do you expect out of Carpenter if he is to continue in the three hole?
I don't know. I mean, traditionally, you, especially in today's MLB, I mean, the three hole is where your big hitter is, your best guy, your power guy, you know? And part of being in that three hole is the expectation that you have two guys in front of you who are decent enough base runners, who are decent enough getting on. And there's sort of this idea that you want to get the ball, drive the ball deep and drive them in. I'll preach it all day because I'm a huge proponent of it. But I mean, the dude led the league in walks last year out of the one spot. I think that as a doubles hitter, as a guy who is able to get on base, I think he would be a better one hitter. I think that obviously as a three hitter, he won't be terrible, but I think a lot of that walk drawing ability and the discipline that he has is sort of wasted in that three hole. I think that a guy like Dexter Fowler, who doesn't have to really focus hard to hit, you know, 15, 20, 30 home runs, or obviously a guy like Ozuna, who despite hitting four hole in his entire career, was brought to the Cardinals to be the guy, to be the number one hitter, to be the big guy. So I while I'm not entirely upset with, well, obviously I am kind of upset with it because I think there are so many other potential options that are just simply better. And I think that Carpenter has wasted some of his potential, especially in the walking department, in the three hole. I think that he can obviously hit the ball very well. He has the ability to drive guys in, especially from like second or third base. It's certainly not the worst option. But I think that having either Fowler there or Ozuna there would be sort of more optimal.
Yeah, and I obviously disagree on this, and I have with many of people. And I will say that I don't really truly believe that Matt Carpenter's walk ability is wasted in the three hole because you have somebody like Ozuna behind him that can – you know, strike very quickly with the home run, and all of a sudden, you know, the Cardinals are up two runs or they get two runs back or they take the lead because of a two-run home run. And that's something that's really dangerous, especially for teams, you know, not wanting to pitch to Ozuna because of that. And my thought process is exactly that, is that if they're afraid to pitch to Ozuna, Matt Carpenter is going to get a chance to hit. And if he is the hitter from 2013 and 2015, like he said he was going to be this year, you know, then you really cause problems for people. Now, the problem here lies with Tommy Pham. If he is on his road to regression, which by today's game you would say, yeah, that might be the case, that's when it becomes complicated because if he is not hitting, if Pham is not hitting, then it becomes an interesting scenario where they will bypass everything else to get to Tommy Pham to get that out. And all of a sudden, Matt Carpenter might not be hitting as well, and you might have to shift the lineup somewhat. And that's going to be interesting moving forward as well. Let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one particular pitcher who absolutely impressed today, and that's young Jordan Hicks, or as Ben Hockman likes to call him, Jordan Hoosiers. So you're listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast, episode 6, season 2. Stick with us. Okay, welcome back to the official Redbird Rants podcast. I'm Tito, joined by Christian May Suzuki. We just got done talking about the Cardinals lineup, how they performed, and our takeaways from the lineup in today's game. But Christian, somebody really took the stage by storm today, and that was none other than Jordan Hicks. I don't know how much better you can get in your debut in the major leagues, but boy, did he look good, right?
I mean, there's a reason that the Cardinals said that he was one of the only untouchable prospects of this offseason in terms of trading for Stanton. And he certainly showed why today. He didn't go under 100 miles an hour on his fastball all game. He showed decent control on both the heater and his breaking balls, more so than Carlos Martinez, who's supposed to be our number one guy. But that's another discussion.
That's neither here nor there, right?
exactly. I mean, 100 mile an hour plus fastball. Not only that, it had some pretty decent sinking action. There was a decent amount of break. It was noticeable. I'm sure the batter, it was certainly noticeable from the broadcast. I think that if you can just keep it in the zone, I mean, I think it was something you don't really see 100 mile an hour fastballs with sink. You don't see even 98 or 96 very often with the kind of sink that we saw today. And I mean, if he can keep it, if he can keep his composure, if he can keep his control down, I mean, he doesn't even have to hit the strike zone all the time. As long as he stays close, I mean, that's something that's definitely something to fear.
Right, and listen to this pitch sequence he had with Jay Bruce to get the third out in his inning. First pitch he threw 101.6 two-seamer 101.6 fastball for a ball. Then he follows that up with another 100.8 two-seamer for a strike, foul tip. Then he dials it down to an 86.4 mile per hour slider to get a strike. And then he dials it back up to 99.8 for four-seam fastball up and away. Like, you honestly, you can't get better than that. I mean, going from 100 down to 86, back up to 100 all in three consecutive pitches, that's something, as Ben Hockman would say, you cannot teach that. You just can't. There's no explanation. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I don't know if you remember a few years ago when – I don't know if it was a few years ago. It was pretty recently when Alex Reyes pitched at the U.S. First World, and there was a huge hoopla about how he threw 101-mile-an-hour fastball, then he threw 80-whatever-mile-an-hour curveball. And, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes you a number one the number one prospect. I mean, Hicks certainly showed very, very elite-level – potential stuff today, and there's no question that he could easily become the closer in the next several years if need be.
Yeah, and if he can harness those pitches, which based on today, he definitely looked like he could do that. And that's the thing, if he's going to continue to be a fastball slider guy, that's great. However, we've seen that happen before with one other pitcher who was a fireball pitcher in Trevor Rosenthal. And what Trevor Rosenthal, in my opinion, always lacked was a changeup. And I'm not sure if Hicks has one in his repertoire, but I believe it would benefit Hicks to get a changeup, especially if you're throwing at 100 miles an hour. Because could you imagine a two-seam fastball coming in at 100 and all of a sudden a changeup coming in at 92, man, your timing would be off. And then to throw a slider at 86.4, only to dial it back up to another 100-mile-an-hour fastball, that's pitching at an elite level, in my opinion. And as long as he has trust in his stuff, yeah, he's going to be an elite pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals for many years to come. And I know I keep saying that he's trade bait, and I still believe in that, especially with them signing Greg Holland. But at some point I'll quiet down and I'll say, you know what, nah, this guy needs to stay with the Cardinals because he's just that good. What do you think? Do you think this showcase of Hicks might lead to something down the road?
It's tough to say. I mean, like I've been saying, the Cardinals seem to really, really value him. I mean, even though on many boards, he's not in the top five or even the top 10 on some of the Cardinals prospect boards. He was one of the only completely untouchable players. And I mean, you can't, like I said, you can't just find these kind of pitchers, the kind of pitcher that Jordan Hicks is. You don't just find them on the streets.
Right.
You know, like just like you can't just like look around and be like, oh, look at that. I mean, this is a very, very unique pitcher we're talking about here. And I mean, especially considering the performance he had here, if he can prove that he can consistently play on the at the major league level, I mean, you would have to. I mean, if I were Jim, you'd have to give me a very good, very established major league baseball player to get him from me, because a unique player like that with the proper control and composure to play at an MLB level, I mean, I that is, in my eyes, that's one of the more priceless things you can imagine in the league right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm not meaning to say that if he's traded, it's going to be for, you know, pennies or whatever. You're right. He has to be a top guy. It just has to happen. And in my opinion, if he is to be traded, you're right, it has to be for an established person. And it just depends on what the Cardinals need is. It's no longer going to be a closer because they have that in Greg Holland. But would it be for another bat that they could put in the three hole or another dangerous bat in the middle of the order? That's obviously a plausible case as well. So we'll see where it goes from here, but boy, what an impressive start to Jordan Hicks's career with the St. Louis Cardinals, and there you just can't really say enough about it. And that's really, really it. So let's go ahead and get to our last topic for tonight, and that's the NL Central predictions, and maybe we'll say even the season predictions. You know, as we said, it's only game one, so I don't feel like we're cheating here, saying, oh yeah, the Cardinals are gonna go, you know, so and so for whatever. So, let's start with you, Christian. How do you see the standings in the Cardinals for the NL Central?
I mean, I honestly, if Greg Holland can perform at a level that he did last year, I mean, I think that this greatly impacts the Cardinals' chances of winning the division. I think that obviously a lot of the issues last year were toward the end of the game, where the bullpen would sort of slip, would sort of give things away, and not just in terms of blown saves, but just over, like, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth of those innings, they would just be – you would always – feel even with a 2-3-4 run lead, there would always be a subconscious sort of worry because the relievers were so inconsistent. And like sometimes I would be screaming at my TV, just throw a strike.
Right.
And like that was really sort of holding the Cardinals back a lot. And I think with all of these veteran pieces, with all of the, you know, the talent and the composure that and the presence that has been added to the bullpen, obviously the talent has jumped significantly, but I mean, I think that with this you have a legitimate bullpen, which is really one of the bigger holes in comparison to the other NL Central teams. I think that they have one of now the deeper rotations in the NL Central. It might not be, obviously, with Carlos not playing very well. You can argue that they're not as good up top as the other three teams. But in terms of pure depth, especially with a guy like Flaherty coming up soon, you know, I think that you could definitely argue that they're certainly going to be the deepest, if they aren't already. And in terms of the lineup, they also filled the one real issue they had was that big central hitter that could command the middle of the lineup and hit home runs. So, I mean, it might not be the best lineup, but I believe that it's complete enough in a way that everyone has the role, all the sort of prototypical roles of players have been filled. Everyone has, this team sort of has all the elements on it necessary to be a successful team and to win a division. And while it's not the most overwhelming team, and it won't be certainly the best team, I think that with this, there's enough there that they can really, really make a push.
So what do you think the win total is for the Cardinals this year? Give us your best guess.
The win total. I will go with the Greg Holland. I will go 95.
You think the Cardinals will win 95 games this year?
Will win 95 games this year, yes.
That's pretty high. I will admit that. I don't think I would go quite that high. I actually said that the Cardinals will probably end up with an 88-74 record. Obviously, I'm going to say that if you believe that the Cardinals are going to win 95 games, you definitely have them winning the division then, right?
As I said, I think it'll be close. I think the Cubs are certainly nothing to be trifled with, and I think that the Brewers are they're coming off a bit of an off year, but they have very, very good young pieces, and I think that they're definitely ready to make the leap to really start competing. So I think that it'll be close, but I think the Cardinals will pull away by maybe 3 to 4 games.
Okay, fair enough. And I think the central standings are going to go, Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, and then Pirates, Reds. Or Reds, Pirates, because they're both bad and they're not going to be really a factor. Let's go ahead and keep going with your predictions here. Do the Cardinals make – you obviously think the Cardinals will make the playoffs. Do you think they can get past the NLDS or the NLCS? Are they a top team in the National League, and can they get to a World Series this year?
You know, it's really hard for me to say as of today. If you asked me yesterday, I might have been able to say something. But, I mean, they certainly added Greg Holland. But, I mean, you have to have a number one pitcher if you're going to get out of a short playoff series. And if Carlos Martinez starts a NLCS, NLDS, with 6 walk game and a loss, that's not only going to just be bad in general, but it's going to be a huge morale dumpster on us. And that could easily single-handedly completely collapse a team. So if Carlos can't get his stuff together, I mean, I don't really have the confidence in the team. This team is certainly tooled even with an occasional blow up from Martinez to win games. But I think when you come to a playoff series and you don't have a number one pitcher, that's not a team you can trust. So if Carlos can get his stuff together and be the pitcher, even be remotely close to the pitcher, just cut down the walks and be remotely close to the pitcher that you're supposed to be, I believe they can get out of the NLDS. Competing with the top teams in the National League and competing with the very, very best, I'm not sure they're there yet, as I said before. They're not quite at an elite talent level yet. But I certainly think that the Cardinals can definitely put something together in terms of a playoff an NLDS run if Martinez is, together. But there's no way that they're going to be able to beat any of the better teams in the league if he doesn't keep his stuff together. Unless we see the Larry prediction, shout out to Larry because I'm mentioning him so many times. Unless we see that come, the Luke Weaver All-Star campaign come together. But if the number one pitcher doesn't emerge, then there's no way.
Yeah, and we'll see how this all shakes out. I personally don't think the Cardinals can make the NLCS as a team right now. Obviously, one game in, it's hard to say that. But I don't have them projected to get to the NLCS. I think it will take something at the trade deadline to really push the team, and maybe that's an extra starter. Does it have to be a number one guy? Possibly. Could it be a middle of the rotation guy to make it that much stronger? That might be the case as well, but who's out there? Which players are available? And obviously the biggest name comes up would be Chris Archer. So that's going to be a really interesting case. But Christian, we've run out of time. It's great talking to you. It's great to have you back with us on the podcast. So we hope to do this again next time. Thank you to all our listeners and to all our readers on RedBurgerRants.com. Don't forget next, I think Sunday or Tuesday, we will have episode 2 of Extra Innings. And we do have another special guest lined up. But again, I won't tell you who it is until that day comes around. You'll just have to find out and listen to us. But I can tell you this, it is another St. Louis media member. So we will be talking more Cardinals baseball here coming up soon. Until then, remember the Cardinals do have a game on Saturday against the Mets, and it goes Jacob DeGrom versus Michael Wacha. So hopefully we can turn it around here and get back on the winning streak here. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, and go Cards.